Hello, Vol Nation. Coach Fulmer here. We have been working like heck, and we are ready. I'm confident we will be playing football in Neyland Stadium this fall. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay strong.
Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is 3 and Out with Nate Hodges and Houston Kress. Many imitators, no duplicators. Fan Run Radio.
As everybody has waited all offseason for this moment to hear that it's game night. And it's time for Tennessee football. And when the Pride of the Southland Band forms that famed tee, you are swimming in Southern college football pageantry.
Balls are back. Before long, we'll be taking a bite out of everybody we play's ass. Thank you very much.
There was a time and place that this university was feared. My goal is to get us back.
Since 1974, I know what the University of Tennessee and the great fan base here is about. I know that. When people talk about Rocky Top, I know what they're talking about.
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, that's no plans of mine. Say, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance.
Welcome into the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. This is 3 and Out.
Is that the definition of a cold opening?
Peach mango.
I didn't feel like waiting.
Adrenaline chuck on deck for Davey Hudson. I'm Houston Kress.
Still trying to get them to cut the check.
We'll work on it. We got time. Squeaky Will on the ones and twos. Will, did you bring the optimism today?
No, I left it in my car. I can go grab it though.
That'd be good because we got to find something. It's Optimism Tuesday. We've got to find something.
Who wants to say it?
Optimism Tuesday. I can't do it the way he does it.
Oh, crack.
Optimism Tuesday. I can't.
That what was that, like Luigi? What was that?
I don't know if that's your mic, if you're too far away when you're talking. I don't know, it sounds different.
Have we turned the page? Are we on to Arkansas? Are we on to the bye week?
No, I actually deliberately left out one quote from yesterday.
A direct quote.
So that we could talk about it for Optimism Tuesday.
Okay, that's good. That is good co-host production radio guy work that you did there. What is the quote? Where is the optimism? We have to find it.
Well,
we might have to dig. We got to dig deep. It's out there. Surely. Somewhere. Someone has optimism. If you have optimism, tweet it in, because we are struggling. It is difficult. I did not expect to feel like this in year three under Jeremy Pruitt. Dejected, sad, hurt. But here we are. I'm not out. Many people are out. Will, are you out on Jeremy Pruitt?
That is a loaded question.
It is. It's fully loaded.
If I'm going to answer just that question straight up of if I'm out on Jeremy Pruitt, I'm going to have to say no. Just because I want to see more, but door's open.
Are you you're teetering?
Door's open.
Yeah, you're teetering.
Door's unlocked.
Yeah, like you can see out from where you're standing.
I've been peeking out the window a couple of times.
Yeah.
Seeing who's in the driveway.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. But I understand a lot of people aren't. It was a tall task he inherited. It was a tough rebuild.
I want to be very clear on something. I have not called for Jeremy Pruitt to be fired yet.
You're out on him, but you have not called for the firing. That's true.
I don't think he is going to... I think he's the type of guy that can consistently have an 8-4 or 7-5 type season. But he's never going to get above third in the East. And now there theoretically is a chance that he changes up his style of play, brings in coaches that are willing to try something a little different. I mean, going into the season, I thought we were going to get a little bit more of the RPO thanks to old buddy
Ozabet.
Ozabet, yeah. Sorry, skipped my brain. Still trying to get helping Adam this morning.
Chug it. Put it right into the veins.
And so,
healthy stuff.
A lot of people,
many people,
after we had yesterday's show, they were coming at me and they were saying, "Did you really expect anything different against Alabama?"
And you absolutely did not. You nailed the score.
And from a result standpoint, no. But it was how we got to that point that was very frustrating, where you weren't seeing them try to actually be competitive. And like I said yesterday, that's not anything I want to actually ever see from my head coach at the University of Tennessee. I know it was a tall order to come in and, like I said, like we're not going to cover the spread. Like Jeremy Pruitt, when it comes to playing Alabama, Florida, Georgia, like he just doesn't keep it close. That's just part of it. And I understand the talent gap, whatever you want to talk about. And then he made the comments about he thinks the gap is closing.
He did say that.
And, you know, his comment, and I for the life of me, I can't find exactly where I had it, but I'm going to paraphrase what his one quote was that should give us optimism.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday against Alabama, that was probably our best offensive performance of the year.
He did say that, even though that's the fewest points Alabama has allowed to any team all season.
That is correct.
So that's the quote. That's our springboard for optimism. Is the best
offensive performance we've had all year.
Well, JG didn't turn it over. Threw two touchdowns. What was he, 14 of 21?
I think it was 13 of 24.
Mm. Okay. It's a little worse than I thought. Okay. Well, the good news is you're not going to see a team like Alabama again that is balanced offensively and defensively the way the Tide are.
No. I would say from an offensive standpoint, Florida's not too far behind, but their defense is not good at all.
No, this might be one of the best offenses Florida's had in a long time. But yeah, their defense is pretty trash. They're not very good. Auburn, I don't think, is very good. They should be 1-4.
Yeah, at least two games for sure they've gotten helped out by the ref.
And absolutely.
Another game is questionable.
So there's some optimism. You got Vanderbilt on the back half of the schedule. You got a Florida team that doesn't play defense. Bodes well for us.
Especially no run defense.
None.
The main thing
whatsoever. Although I wish our running backs could break a tackle. We'll get there. It's a good bye week. Jay Graham spoke to the quarterback club. He said that's what they're going to work on, breaking some tackles, getting guys some reps. Arkansas, obviously a very winnable game. They're not very good. Much better than I expected. Kudos to Sam Pittman, to Carl Odom, defensive coordinator. Barry Odom. A&M? What do we think about A&M?
I think you skipped over a key component for Arkansas.
Go ahead. Felipe Franks, is that where you're going?
No, I was
going
to go with Kendall Briles. If there is a coach in this league that I think wants to actually prove he is ready, and if there's a guy he hates more than any other coach in this league.
Based on rumors, it might be Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, Jeremy Pruitt and Kendall Briles do not have a good relationship whatsoever. And so I think Kendall's going to come out and wanting to prove he can put up as many points as possible on Jeremy Pruitt's defense.
Well, the good news is Arkansas, talent-wise, isn't that good. So he may want to do that. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that.
Yeah, Felipe Franks and that Burks kid, and that's really all I've seen all season.
Their defense has been pretty stout, though. I'll give him credit. Like, Barry Odom never should have been a head coach. Got promoted because they didn't want to, you know, go through a big coaching search. They were running out of money. There was a lot of issues at Missouri. Pinkel retires, and they went with the guy who had been there.
I don't even know how good their defense is. They've obviously had that 6-interception game against Ole Miss, and so that's going to kind of bend the stats a little bit. But in terms of just like actual,
didn't they also shut down Mississippi State?
Yeah, Mississippi State had 14, and I want to say one of those was a pick six.
That's a good point.
But yep.
The way they played Auburn and gave up a bunch of points, the way they played Georgia, obviously it's Georgia, and we gave up a lot of points too. But their defense, I mean, it looks good, but it doesn't look unbeatable.
Yeah, they held Ole Miss to 21.
Okay.
I think Ole Miss had like 5 or 6 players out in that game, and Matt Corral just looked awful.
And they still were able to score 21 while throwing 6 interceptions, along with 2 pick sixes.
Right.
I know everything's changed. Like right now, my coach of the year is Sam Pittman.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
I mean, they should be 3-1. The refs, ultimate screw job, where you threw a backwards pass and they called it a dead ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you'll get to see a lot this weekend, honestly, as far as SEC games. I think watching them play Texas A&M is the one I'm probably the most intrigued about.
Yeah. I mean, that's two – is that the next two games? Is it Arkansas and then A&M and then Auburn after that, if I'm not mistaken? I get the A&M and Auburn game flipped in my head. But, no, yeah, that's two future opponents. We'll see if Arkansas is for real. Yes, sir. This whole thing, we talked about it yesterday. Like, it all stems from the Kentucky game. You go out and you lay an absolute egg. You're non-inspired. Quarterback's terrible.
Arkansas, A&M, Auburn, Vandy, Florida.
Okay. Again, I'm with you, David. Like, I don't think anybody would have been shocked by the Alabama game. They wouldn't be that upset about it if you hadn't have just completely not shown up for the Kentucky game. Like, that's the issue. Pruitt can say the gap's closing. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. What happened against Kentucky is the real problem here. That's the issue. That can't happen. And it did. So now can you rebound? Because we talked about this before the season started. Like, what are the expectations of the season? Let's beat the teams we're supposed to beat. You started the season off well doing that. Beat South Carolina, who has been maybe a little better than I thought. They got rolled by LSU, but maybe LSU's figuring it out with that new quarterback. You took care of Missouri, took care of business. Missouri beats Kentucky this past weekend, which is even more confusing to Tennessee fans probably. It's confusing to me. Can you go take care of business the rest of the way?
Missouri is a very confusing team, but I think I said it, and I don't think I'm like the only one who said it, so I'm not trying to like toot my own horn or get credit for it. But like,
pat yourself on the back. It's okay.
If Connor Bazelak started that Tennessee game,
it would have been closer. Yeah. I still don't think Tennessee would have lost, but it would have been a lot closer. It would have been a much different game.
Those first two drives, they dug themselves in a hole, and they were close to backdoor covering on the spread the whole entire time. So I mean, I just think it would have been a much closer game if they weren't in a hole to start the game.
I think Billy said last night it was 14-0 when he came in, and then we were plus 9 the rest of the way. So, yeah, I mean, he was obviously much better than, I forget the other kid.
Robinson,
yeah. He was a much better option for them than that guy. But I don't think we would have lost. I think it would have been a lot closer.
Well, I mean, it's just, yeah, your first two games started out well. And in Houston, that's kind of, I guess, getting into the crux of what I was wanting to ask you about as far as reasons for optimism looking forward, because I know this season's been a little unpredictable, especially as far as things going, but I'm not one to use COVID as an excuse, especially whenever you've not had any guys miss time due to COVID. Once the season has started,
mm-hmm.
and you won your first two games.
5 weeks now without a positive case?
I believe that's the case. But you win your first two games. Granted, we didn't necessarily think we played fantastic. I mean, we thought we played good. But then I know you had Georgia, you had Alabama. You were interested to see how we stack up, if, in fact, the gap was closing. And based off the score, it's not. I mean, it is a results-driven league. And so whenever you have three straight losses of 20 points or more, fans are going to start to get restless no matter who you're playing.
Especially, though, when one of them's Kentucky.
Yes.
I mean, that's, again, like, that's the whole problem. Like, the first half against Georgia, I thought, okay, Tennessee's playing poorly, but we can compete with teams like Georgia.
And it wasn't that we just lost to Kentucky. It was in the fashion that we did. Like, we'd never get beat like that, especially by Kentucky, especially at home.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest thing, too, is the inability on this coaching staff to adjust. You talk about second half adjustments, and they have been trash the last three games. I mean, you say what you want.
With Bama and Georgia, I think that has to do more with the opponent. And then obviously a quarterback in the second half against Georgia just giving them the ball on three straight possessions. Should have probably been four, but he recovers a fumble there.
Well, that's on coaching for not making a change.
No, I agree with that. I'm just saying, it's one thing if, oh, yeah, they're doing this specific, they're running crossing patterns and we're in man, maybe drop the zone and try to cut that out. Or, oh, the quarterback's running a lot, we need to put in a spy. Those are the kind of adjustments I'm talking about. I agree. I've said it all season long. The minute JG makes a mistake, you got to put him on the bench, let him think about it, bring in somebody else, maybe for a series, maybe for two. He is a black hole of mistakes when the first one goes down. That's just who he is. It's who he's always been.
You have a fifth-year starting quarterback, and he's averaging 182 passing yards a game.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal.
You cannot win in this league. I don't care how good your defense is.
In any league in 2020 with that type of quarterback play. You can't do it.
Especially with the turnovers on top of that. And so,
and they're not just turnovers. They're the catastrophic points for the other team are imminent turnovers.
And so that leads me to asking you the question as we are moving forward, as someone who, and I'll even preface it this way. I know last year, Jeremy Pruitt, things were looking pretty, pretty bad, and he managed to get things turned around.
Mm-hmm.
It's year three, and whenever you look at all the other first-year head coaches in the SEC, they, I would say, are doing a much better job than Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, right now, like, if I had to rank performances, the only coach I would have behind Jeremy Pruitt is probably Derek Mason.
What about Mike Leach? Aren't they 1-4?
They are, but, you know,
they do have a good win over
LSU.
They have
a good win.
Who we kind of realize now is not very good, but then they stomp South Carolina.
I know it's been bad the last couple of weeks, but it's a first-year head coach in the SEC. Like, I mean, he's taking over a new program.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, I'm going to give Sam Pittman a little bit more leniency. I mean, that program, like, I asked the question last week, and I was surprised. And I know Vol fans, like, obviously pay more attention to Tennessee, but they said that Tennessee, that Pruitt took over a worse situation than Sam Pittman did. And I'm like, guys, Sam Pittman has no talent. He came into a program that in the last 3 years had won one SEC game, and he should be 3-1 right now.
Weren't they 0 for their last 19 when he took over?
I think 2017 was the last time they mm-hmm. won an SEC game. Maybe 2018.
I think they had lost 19 straight SEC games. And he's 2-2 now, obviously conference-only schedule, and probably – well, not probably. He absolutely should be 3-1. No, he's done a fine job. I'm not knocking Sam Pittman. I'm not a fan of Sam Pittman, but – he's done a much better job than I think most people expected. He went out and got really good coordinators. Really good coordinators.
On the Mike Leach thing, Mississippi State has looked like worse than bad, though. Like, especially that offense. Like, they just can't get anything going.
Yeah, it was
like,
weird.
2 points against Kentucky, 14, mm-hmm. obviously, when we talked about Arkansas, and one of them was a pick six, as y'all mentioned. Like, it went from, you can't stop this, to, this is the easiest thing to stop in the world.
Well, Barry Odom figured it out. He said, oh, we're just going to rush three and drop eight and make you throw it short, well, make you take the five-yard run, and that's been the knock on Leach, is when teams show him that, he doesn't want to take the five-yard run. He wants to keep calling the deep shots.
That's not been so much of the issue. It's just, and again, like, I know I'm a big Mike Leach fan.
It has been. But it's also year one for him. Like, I totally get it. Like, they can game plan all year for LSU, all offseason, but now that, you know, I think Barry Odom cracked the code a little bit for this year, they're only going to get better.
I guess you could, yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's like I put the quarterback situation on Jeremy Pruitt like I do with Jared Garantano. That's kind of thing. It's like Leach has been calling for the checkdowns, but Costello kept trying to hit the bomb.
Mm-hmm. And well, yeah, he tasted glory in week one, so he wants that back. He wants I threw for 600 and something yards. I want to do that again. That was fun. Nah, man, take the checkdown. It's the same thing Jared Garantano did against Kentucky. Take the check down. Nope, I want to throw the deep post pick six. Take the check down. No, I want to hit the 35-yard out route to game 4.5 pick six. Taste of glory. Take the check down.
So I'll ask you this question. From what we've seen so far, why should I have optimism that Jeremy Pruitt will be able to get it turned around?
We will ponder that question. We will ponder it. If you want to give us a call this morning, the G3 Help Me hotlines are open, 865-546-8200. If you have optimism, share it. If you don't, share that too. But we're going to try to find some optimism. Why, in year three, after a 2-3 start, should you still be optimistic? We'll chew it on the other side. This is 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident, call the Knoxville-based law offices of G. Turner Howard III. Visit g3helpme.com or give them a call at 865-558-8030. Serving all of East Tennessee with over 20 years of experience, let the G3 team get you the money you deserve. That's G3HelpMe.com. We go now to the G3 Help Me hotlines, where from the Golden Coast, Nate Hodges. What, it's like 4:30 in the morning and you're calling in? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in hell, Houston. It's literally hell.
You
can't sleep.
You're in Orange County, California, and you're in hell?
I know.
What's wrong with you?
It's on fire. Have you seen the news? It's fire.
Yeah,
it's literally burning.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Libs that
that's
much.
Actually true. Yeah.
No, it is on fire. There are two fires. We drove all around them yesterday, had to avoid road closures. It was, it's the West Coast hell. And not to mention that, it's 3:00 in the morning, and of course my body's like, time to get up, Nate. Let's go do the show.
Well, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I couldn't help it. 4:00 hit, and I was like, hey, the show's starting. I'm going to fire it up and listen to this.
Can you give us an Optimism Tuesday?
Oh, can I give you optimism, Houston?
No, can you actually say the phrase? Because we miss it. I can't get my voice to go that high.
You can't do an Optimism Tuesday.
There it is. Now I'm getting fired up. Now I'm ready.
What was the worst part of Butch Jones, Houston? What was the worst part of his tenure at Tennessee?
The pressers.
Just globally. No. The worst part was that you thought you had something, that it took forever to find out that you didn't. The optimism here, this is an easy one. You can't fire Jeremy Pruitt right now. Maybe you shouldn't have given him the extension, but who cares about that? I mean, once you know, it's fine. You weren't going to fire him this year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even at the end, like, it's you know, I mean, you're going to give... You do have to give any coach some element of time to see, but I would just rather know. Like, obviously, he is training on the job on some level.
Yeah.
Anybody
yeah.
at this point, I mean, when you can't beat Georgia State, like, that's a big red flag. He did kind of correct that one. This year, he can't handle the quarterback position right. I don't know whether that means that the other three guys are just all so bad that they have to keep rolling out Jared Garantano, or maybe they haven't, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. There's a million opinions there, but this is not hard. Jeremy Pruitt is either going to make or break Tennessee early, and then we'll know, and then we'll be able to either, you know, reset, or he'll be the guy. So we find out. Like, the worst part of Butch Jones for me was having to go through a complete season where everyone knew he wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So if Jeremy Pruitt's not going to be it, I would just rather know sooner. It's just like a Band-Aid here. It's easy. Like, either we'll either know or we won't.
When will we know?
Well, that's hard to tell.
Can we know this year? Can we know this year?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
I mean, I think I don't think it makes a lot of sense to grade any coach if you're ultimately thinking. It's fun for us to talk about job approval and hiring and firing in the middle of the season. Like, there's a difference in that and, like, seriously, if you were Philip Fulmer having to make decisions. And most of the time, you don't ever make that decision until either the end of the season or right at the end of the season if you're 100% sure, like we did with Butch Jones. Like, it's like, okay, let's get this guy out of here. Let's have a game or two at the end of the season, jumpstart a coaching search, no problem. But, like, halfway through a season, you're never going to literally be pulling the trigger as the decision maker. I don't understand why people have such a problem with what, like, people talking about it and then ultimately, like, making the call. Like, you can say, well, he sucks right now, but he might turn it around. Like, there's no problem with that. But people, they just get way too serious about the pulling the trigger conversation when, I mean, at the end of the day, you're still in the middle of the season, and any real decision that's going to be made is going to have a lot more evidence. So, I mean, it's kind of like last year. You're going to get a bunch of games here at the end of the year that will tell you yay or nay. I mean, when he lost to Georgia State, we were like, you know, if he only wins one more game this year, we probably just need to go ahead and fire him. And I still stand by that. If he had lost every game last year, except for maybe he beat Vandy the same way he did, then you probably should just rolled him last year. But he didn't. He won all those games. So you know, as much as I hate to say it, you're kind of in that same situation this year where, yeah, if he loses every game the rest of the way, including Vanderbilt, maybe you fire him. If he loses a lot of games, maybe wins one or two, but Philip Fulmer knows that there's, like, you know, that he got in a fight with Jim Chaney and they tried to punch each other, yeah, maybe you fire him. If Philip Fulmer knows that everything is going really well and we lose a bunch of games by 1 point and quarterback plays different, and you win some games big. Who knows? Like, that's the thing. The other deal with Tennessee is everything is always unexpected, right? I mean, I literally sat there on the show and said, well, there's no way we'll lose to Georgia State. I said that before last season, and we lost. You know, no one would have expected the Kentucky loss to be that way. I mean, hell, their own big homer, Kentucky Sports Radio dude, was Matt Jones, he said, I will never pick Kentucky to beat Tennessee. And they shelled us because we just gave them, you know, almost three touchdowns, just handed it to them. So, like, no one expected that. So I don't know how anybody can look at the rest of the season and be like, well, we'll definitely beat Arkansas. Who knows? They might pound our eyes shut. Or we'll definitely lose to Florida. Who knows? They might be a mess. They might be without their top two quarterbacks. We may have a different quarterback by then. I don't know. Like, I don't understand why it's so hard for people to say, man, I don't know if Jeremy Pruitt's going to make it. Oh, how dare you say they need to fire him? It's like, whoa. It's halfway through the season. Who cares? We can have this conversation without freaking out about it one way or the other.
I'll kind of go against that, your initial point, Nate, and seeing that, obviously, I agreed we should have gotten rid of Butch Jones at the end of 2016, where you lose to Vanderbilt in South Carolina. But kind of putting Tennessee back in the same situation, we're in one of those years to where I don't think, as bad as it gets, you're going to be able to afford to fire him. And that was the situation with Butch Jones, where you didn't really have an athletic director in charge. And if you did have some stable leadership at that point, you probably pull a Florida or Georgia and you realize, you know what, we need to go ahead and make the move before things get much worse. And fortunately for their programs, they made the move when they needed to, and they're at the top of the East. And Tennessee's yet to do that, and I'll use COVID as an excuse here, especially from a financial situation after looking into where we currently stand whenever you're looking at the dollar figures. I don't see how they're able to pull the trigger unless they just want to get rid of Pruitt and keep everybody else in place. That's like the only way I see it happening. But from a buyout standpoint, I mean, granted, we are good at lighting money on fire, but I just don't see how they would be able to do it if things
happening this year. It's just not.
No, but I mean, that kind of goes back to knowing it's like, man, we just have to sit through another year. Because if things get bad, it's not like it's going to get better next year.
Why is that?
I mean, I guess I don't think it's going to get that bad this year. And I think you're going to sit through next year either way. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you're going to go through next year. So if he really, like, we're not going to change what he thinks, what he does, whatever. It's going to be 20, like, you're going to have Jeremy Pruitt as your head coach in 2021 football season. So what I'm saying is, if he's not going to, I would rather him, see, the problem with Butch Jones is he always thought he was right, even when he was absolutely wrong. And with Pruitt, I feel like he's run into that same fork in the road. It's like, buddy, you're wrong on this because look at the results. It did not work. So whatever you were doing, can you go back to the fork and take the other route? And I would rather know by the end of this year that he's just so stubborn that he's just not head coaching material. And then by the end of next year, then Philip Fulmer will have the ammunition to go to people and say, look, I know it's been, you know, 2 years ago, it was a tough financial situation, but, you know, we're coming out of this and we just have to make a change or it's going to be even worse financials because no one's going to come to the games anymore. I would rather be in that situation than going to 2021 thinking, well, I don't know, maybe he's the guy, maybe he's not, I'm not sure. You know, like, it's shown the East was so far down that we still went into 16 thinking that, you know, maybe if he'll just let the coordinators work, I mean, maybe, you know, we were close against Alabama, we were close. I don't know. I would rather, I mean, it's possible that Kentucky with Butch Jones, if Butch Jones had been the coach the other day, 2 weeks ago, would have played so poorly that maybe you come back and win that game by a field goal. And to me, that's worse. It's worse to, because when the team wins games that they probably shouldn't win, you're just delaying the inevitable. It's like you're not touching the top teams in the conference, but when you beat Kentucky every time, Vanderbilt every time, South Carolina, Missouri every time, it gets really hard for Philip Fulmer to pull the trigger because you've got probably, 60% of the fan base. It's like, I don't know. I think if we just give – I mean, he's our guy. If we just give him a little more time, and I would rather just know. So if we've basically now had Jeremy Pruitt have some huge moments where he's been shown – it's like somebody's holding up the mirror and saying, buddy, fix this. fix this, fix this. And, I mean, he knows that Tyson Helton didn't work, and he attempted to fix that, and I thought he made a good hire. We all agree that Jim Chaney was about the best you could have gotten for that job. Maybe now it's like, hey, let's find another. We've got to figure out the quarterback position. I don't know what that is. Like, he's made that bed, and now they're just having to lay in it. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to, like, know what that is. But if they don't fix the quarterback position, you know, here in the next back half of the season, if it just continues to sabotage and give games away, then whatever. The most frustrating thing for me coming out of the Alabama game was that they completely handcuffed the quarterback. Like, you cannot win big that way. So I don't know. I need to know what the next step is. Like, are we going to try and play that way the rest of the year? And just, if so, you're probably not going to beat A&M, and you're probably not going to beat Florida. But I don't know. Was that just kind of a let's handcuffing against Alabama and let's try and see if we can build him back up and allow him to do things that he's good at, like taking those shots down the field against man coverage. I mean, he throws a great ball in that situation, but he cannot read zone coverage over the middle. Maybe they're just, I don't know, maybe Harrison Bailey rolled in and hadn't studied at all, didn't know anything, didn't take the position seriously, and maybe they just can't play a kid like that, because maybe Harrison Bailey wouldn't have the support of the teammates. They obviously don't think J.T. Stroud's the guy, and Brian Maurer was hurt, and who knows what they think of him. If they just think they have no quarterback and that's the only way that they can win games, then, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But I feel like Jeremy Pruitt's been knocked over the head with, hey, buddy, here's some things you've got to be better at, and he'll either fix those things, and that'll be good news for Tennessee, or he won't, and eventually we'll have another coach, but we'll know sooner. We won't go through, you know, years and years of people trying to tell us how great a guy is when everybody knows he's not.
Nate, what's not working globally for Tennessee? Like, I'm looking at their staff, right? I mean, Derek Ansley, Jim Chaney, Jay Grant. I mean, like, the staff is good. The product is not good. Is it quarterback play? Is it philosophy in general? Like, what exactly is not working for Jeremy Pruitt, and can he fix it?
Well, I worry about the defensive line, because the kids up there, while they might be good kids or whatever, they're not the level of athlete that you need to win, to challenge Georgia and Alabama. And it doesn't matter who the coach is, that position. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Jeremy Pruitt didn't get along with Jimmy Brumbaugh, whatever. Like, who cares? Like, that really didn't matter. Those guys, they showed on Saturday, like, they're not going to be good enough to win the SEC East with that level of recruiting. I mean, you got a transfer in Aubrey Solomon, right, who was highly recruited but might have been a little overrated, even if he plays pretty well. You got a bunch of three-star guys up there. They've taken a bunch of shots on size, hoping they can find, you know, a diamond in the rough here or there. And they've gotten those guys to kind of a solid level where they can shut down the run against, you know, the bottom half of the league. But they can't stop teams, and they can't pressure teams like that have elite offensive lines. Like, they just cannot physically match up. So I'm a little worried about that area. They just need to recruit a little bit better. And obviously now there's a huge coaching void there. They got to find somebody that does get along with Pruitt and can get those guys to play really physical and elevate above their star level. The offensive line is still, they did pass block a lot better against Alabama, but Alabama's also, I noticed, just sat back a lot and never. There was a very atypical game plan from Nick Saban on defense. I mean, he knew that Tennessee was not going to be able to make a bunch of chunk plays down the field a la Ole Miss and score touchdowns if they just sat back. So they just sat back. They let Tennessee, you know, gain some yardage when they could. They rarely got put into man coverage down the sideline. And Garantano, when they did, Garantano was even still able to hit that ball. But they just, like, to me, the offensive line pass blocked really well, but they weren't really challenged by Alabama. Alabama decided that's not where they wanted to win the game. They wanted to win the game by just knowing that Tennessee was limited at quarterback. So, to me, the problem spots are defensive line. The offensive line never seems to – whatever their philosophy is there is just not working. I don't know if it's the roulette. I don't think those players are all – like, I don't think they're all overrated necessarily. It's like they have no identity with the offensive line. It's like we can't decide if we're going to be a physical gap scheme team, if we're going to be a physical zone team. Obviously, they want to run the football first. But then, you know, Jim Chaney, if the run's not there, if people are stacking the box, he wants to throw it. So I think there's a cohesion issue between Will Friend, Jim Chaney, Jeremy Pruitt. Like, they've got to figure out quarterback and offensive line, because, I mean, we saw it on Saturday. Like, Jalen Hyatt could be a stud.
Burn.
You know, Josh Palmer
speed to
is,
burn.
Is good at – yeah, yeah. Jalen Hyatt could be a stud. Josh Palmer is good enough. I mean, he was going to – they said – Sertan? They
yeah.
said he's the best corner in maybe in college football. Now, maybe that's just Gary Danielson blowing smoke, but obviously he's really, really good. And Josh Palmer went toe-to-toe with him. So I feel like I think the running backs are just, you know, above average. I don't know that you compete for a championship with, you know, you probably need to get better at that, a little better at that position. But that's the way the team is. I look around, I'm like, it'd be nice to be a little better here, a little better here, a little better here. But then you look at the most important position on the football team, and you're like, but we got to be light years better here. Because the only reason, and this is my biggest frustration coming out of the game, the only reason Jarrett Garantano wasn't that bad on Saturday is because they didn't let him play quarterback in a way where you could win the football game.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran the ball like half the time on third and more than five.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot get first downs and win football games in the SEC if you're running the ball in half your third and long. Like, you can't. Like, that's a give-up play, and they, you know, that's what frustrated me more about it. Not so much that they game-planned it that way, because, like you guys said earlier, like, they weren't going to win that game, but that fans were like, well, see, JG wasn't that bad today. Didn't make any – it's like, yeah, dude, I can hand the ball. They could teach me that playbook in 1 week, and I would make all the handoffs correctly, guaranteed. Like, it is not hard to find a kid to hand the ball off. So, like, you know, I mean, they could have stuck anyone out there to run that offense. And, you know, JG hit a couple balls that he's good at throwing that one route. But, you know, he's a fifth-year senior. Like, you've got to be able to hit some other stuff. So anyway, that was a long-winded way to answer your question. But basically, you still have to be better in the trenches, and you got to be better quarterback.
All right, Nate, we're up. We got a bye week. Preparing for Arkansas. What do you want to see happen, and what do you think will happen, specifically at quarterback?
Oh, I think it's all JG. I mean, I think
don't say that. It's Optimism Tuesday, man. Come on.
You think they've
locked in with two the rest of the way?
I don't know how. Alabama went to their blowout quarterback. You know, like, hey, it's like, hey, white flag, this game is over. We're going to let our young guy get some reps before Tennessee did.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't tell you all you need to know about how they think of the position, and I think Jeremy Pruitt kind of threw a shot at the other three quarterbacks when he said, we can't just play a kid because he's young just to play him if he hasn't earned the respect of going. Maybe these other three guys just aren't working very hard in practice. And I don't know. I mean, you know how Jim Chaney is. He's not exactly a, like, grind it out, you know, put a million hours. He's not the Peyton Manning of quarterback coaches. What I mean by that is he's more of kind of a fun-loving guy, like, hey, here's what we're doing. Let's go have some fun doing it. You MF-er, you know, yada, yada, yada. Like, he will yell at you, but he's not, I don't think he necessarily demands the quarterbacks study the position like a lot of other QB gurus. So I just wonder if Jeremy Pruitt's looking at those other quarterbacks like, man, none of these guys are it. Like, they have not put in the time to be the starting quarterback at Tennessee, and he just refuses to allow a kid to come into a program, definitely one that's rebuilding, with a lot of kids who are kind of on the fence of, am I all in here or not? He's not going to stick a kid out there who he doesn't feel like has put in as much work, you know, and let them play, especially quarterback. Maybe we've looked at it kind of in reverse, where instead of treating the quarterback like any other position, Pruitt actually expects more of the quarterback from a work ethic standpoint, and none of those other quarterbacks have put in the work that JG has or that Pruitt expects or whatever. And if that is the case, I mean, he needs to have a tough conversation with Jim Chaney and say, look, and Chris Winkie even more so, and say, buddy, your quarterback, you know, these three quarterbacks are killing us, because any other team would have at least had somebody ready to go into a game when it's over, right? I mean, Alabama did, like,
mm-hmm.
and they're the team that's ahead. You know, even if they think JG's coming back next year, you'd still want to develop somebody as the backup. You still want to develop somebody as the guy after that, which I think it's even even if they think JG's coming back next year, don't they want somebody to compete and go toe-to-toe with him and maybe beat him out? Like, how in the world do they not see that? The only explanation, if those guys know what they're doing, and I just can't buy the fact that they're so bad at coaching that they have no idea. I mean, come on. Like, Pruitt's been a coach at a lot of good places with good quarterback play. Like, I don't think he might make a lot of mistakes. He might be really stubborn, but I cannot jump to the conclusion that he's this dumb that you can just roll out anybody at quarterback and be fine. My only kind of new revelation is maybe they just think that those other three guys have done nothing to show that they ever can be the quarterback. And maybe with Harrison Bailey, he's so young, COVID, no spring practice, whatever, maybe they're trying to light a fire under his ass. Like, look, buddy, you can't just show up at practice and expect to get your shot because you were a five-star. Like, you've got to work. You've got to put in time, and maybe he's not doing it. I don't know. This is just speculation. Don't take this as what's happening. But it's the only logical explanation, and Pruitt kind of talked about it. He said, look, you can't just roll in here and expect to get playing time without, putting in the time. And against Alabama, it's a great time to make that statement to the kids. Because you weren't going to win anyway. If Harrison Bailey's in the game, you're not going to win the football game. So for Pruitt, he was going to be 0-1 at the end of the day. Who cares? He's kind of put his foot down and said, look, like, you're not going to get meaningful playing time until you put some effort in. And he stuck by that. Maybe he can walk into the QB room, yesterday and say that, or Sunday. And now they have 2 weeks to, like, all right, I need to be different if I expect to play. And I don't know, maybe that changes or maybe it doesn't.
Isn't it time to force feed one of these guys, though? Like, at this point, like, you know what you have with JG. You have a quarterback who, in a big game, you can't call the plays you want. You got to run it on 3rd and 7. Like, isn't it time to just pick one of these guys and force feed him the playbook, the reps, everything? I mean, you got a bye week. Yeah. It seems like the perfect time to do it. I just cannot fathom that Jeremy Pruitt's thinking, yep, the next 17 games, the rest of this year and next year, JG's going to be our guy, and we're going to win a bunch of football games.
Yeah, and see, this is where we go to how stubborn is he and what's he really mean. Like, if he believes everything he's saying in the press conferences, then I mean, Lord help us. Like, I mean, him saying that he's won a bunch of football games for us, there's a large element of the fan base that's very casual, that probably don't listen to our show, probably don't listen to any shows. They just watch the game on Saturday and they go about life. I think that's who Jeremy Pruitt's talking to at those post-game press conferences, or thinks he's talking to in those, when he's like, yeah, he's won a bunch of games. He's just trying to do the PR thing.
Mm-hmm.
But surely to God, they realize that they can't win running the football on 3rd and long, like, every time. You're not going to be, like, they're never going to get, I mean, he basically talked about he took the job because he wanted to bring Tennessee back. I mean, that's essentially what he said.
Yeah.
He's got to know that I'm hoping they were only handcuffing JG just to get through the Alabama game. And then, yes, in these other football games, they're going to either take the reins off of him a little bit when he's in, but then also get somebody else ready and take the handcuffs off them. Because this happened last year. They handcuffed JG in the Mississippi State game and won.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Missouri game later in the season, they let him throw it all over the place. And it went fine. I mean, I don't think they're going to try and run the ball on 3rd and 7 every single time against Arkansas. Like, I just don't. They got, like you said, they have 2 weeks. They've got to get somebody else ready. Apparently, JT Stroud was the only guy they thought they could get ready for the season.
Right.
And as they tried to get him ready, they realized that he's just not going to be the dude. So now they're, so hopefully this 2 week window does give them a chance to reset and they can say, all right, Brian Maurer's healthy now. We're going to put everything into him for 2 weeks and make sure he's ready. Or Harrison Bailey is more talented than these other two guys. We finally kind of gotten him here where he's, studying and preparing the right way. Let's get him ready. I don't know what that looks like, but yeah, I mean, there's got to be, obviously has to be something different there.
What did you make of JT Shrout and Harrison Bailey playing as backups against Kentucky, but then Maurer was the first guy off the bench against Alabama?
It confuses the hell out of me. Like, I don't understand. They do that with the offensive line. They went, they ran the ball right down Kentucky's throat with an offensive line in the second quarter, scored a touchdown, and the next possession when the offensive line came out, it wasn't the same five guys in the same five spots. Like they had swapped the guy out, moved the guy around. Like why? What on what planet does that make any sense? Like these five offensive linemen played well enough to slam it down Kentucky's throat. I think they ran the ball for 71 yards out of the 75 yards on the drive. You score a touchdown. It's 17-7. I mean, I'm over here thinking, man, I might want to place a live bet. I think Tennessee might come back and win this game because Kentucky's done nothing on offense.
Yeah, I saw that tweet. And it didn't age well.
No, it didn't. It didn't. That's the life of in-game tweeting. That's fine. But, like, I don't understand how, like, on what planet does that make sense? Like, you have five guys, they played the best out of any five combination that entire game on that one drive, and so you make a change for the next drive? Like, what? And then at quarterback, it's almost like the opposite. It's like, yeah, this guy sucks, but we're not going to make a move ever. So I don't know. The staff's got to come together and figure this bleep out because it's just that sort of thing is maddening. And like you said, like there's no pecking order for the quarterback. We don't even know. They don't even know. And it goes all the way back to last year. And I guess, you know, circle all the way back around to the first optimistic point, but to go negative and kind of be on Davey's side here. The guy didn't know who the number two quarterback was last year when your number one got hurt or when your number one had an equipment problem. Like that is, maybe he is that dumb. Maybe he makes this staff just like not function correctly because I have seen a lot of little things like that completely blow my mind of how you can be a head coach in the SEC and not get these. He still tries to substitute when the offense doesn't substitute. And do you know Tennessee's taken more timeouts on defense this year than offense, which is kind of one of those big red flags that like you don't know what you're doing coaching defense. Which boggles the mind, right? I mean, this at minimum, Pruitt should be
defensive genius.
One of the top defensive geniuses in the country. But when you promote him to head coach, I don't know if that's the problem or if this is just him not adjusting to the new tempo, you know, element in college football. But like, we call more timeouts because we get stuck with the wrong guys on the field or about to have 12 men in the formation than any other team in college football. With our head coach being the defensive genius. So I just don't – like, those are things that Jeremy Pruitt's got to look in the mirror and go, I have to be better here. How can I do it? Who do I need to talk to? Because I feel like the coaching staff obviously has had some cohesion issues this year already, and obviously the last offensive coordinator with Pruitt, that was a train wreck. And like we said from Jump Street, he's got to figure out what he's doing on offense and get it right. And if the rest of this year goes poorly, then next year will just be – okay, buddy, like either show us a huge improvement or if you keep doing the same thing, then, you know, it's going to be the end.
Nate, we're up against the top of the hour break. Do you want to hang through or do you, have you exhausted all of your optimism?
No, I think you guys have heard enough from me. I'm going to need to run. Hopefully, seriously, say a prayer for the people out here with these fires. It's scary stuff. Like you know, we've had that one incident there at East Tennessee with Gatlinburg and all that stuff, and I'm sure a lot of people still remember that. Out here, I went outside yesterday morning, and the winds were insane. And somebody even said, yeah, this is usually when the fires get bad. And then, boom, there were two. Just like, I mean, they both started yesterday in this area. So pretty scary for people. I think over 100,000 people evacuated yesterday alone. So, anyway, I'm fine where I am, but, yeah, it's rough times out here, and I think you guys got it from here. I appreciate you guys running, blowing through it, though, and let me have a little air time. I couldn't resist.
Couldn't stay away. Well, stay safe out there, brother.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Be good. Hodges, Orange County, 4 a.m. We thank you. We had a quick break. Come back on the other side, maybe try to unpack some of Nate's takes. Davey's still hunting for some optimism. Maybe he'll give us some of that. Back after this.